There are many far-reaching dinim in the fifth aliyah of Mishpatim. Begins with the language Lo Satem Mishpat Evyon Chabrivo, that we should not tilt the justice towards the direction of the Evyon, who we might think may need it, and we shouldn't incorporate that into the Psak. It's one thing when we're considering Tzedaka, then, as the Yerushalmi points out, here the language is specifically Berivo, that requiring absolute objectivity and justice. But when it comes to Tzedaka, so then we should be tilting towards the needs of the Ani, and in the situation of Safek, we would err on the side of generosity. But regarding justice, it has to be objective. The Mechilta has an additional drasha here, going in the other direction, that perhaps the individual is an Evyon b'mitzvos, that he is a person of low spiritual stature, and you might think that that's a reason to create a guilt status for him, to consider him to be guilty, and that's also prohibited from this pasuk. And the Rambam and the Sefer HaMitzvos and the Sefer HaChinuch bring those dinim as well. The next pasuk, the very well-known notion of Midvar Sheker Tirchak, but not so well understood exactly what's included in it. There's much discussion as to why the Torah uses the language of Tirchak here to stay away from. This is unique. Normally, when there's a prohibition, there is a language of Hishomer, Lav, Pen, Al. The Gemara tells us those four languages of prohibition. What exactly is being conveyed here with the language of Tirchak? The Sefer HaChinuch understands it to be essentially a mega isser, that Merov Tiuvo, we are so repulsed by Sheker that we're not even allowed to come near. Others understand it to come across in a different way, that there isn't an actual prohibition here, or that there's a limited prohibition. So there is a discussion as to what exactly is included in this issur. Do we assume that any false statement is prohibited by Midvar Sheker Tirchak, or is it more limited? There are a number of drashos in the Gemara Masechet Shavuos on Daf Lamed that have all kinds of applications of Midvar Sheker Tirchak, specifically within a judicial context, within a Beis Din. So there are those who understand that this is really the applicability of this pasuk, that it's comparable to perjury, that it applies to lying in an official context. There are those who see it as more comparable to fraud, if we're talking about legal categories. So they say for Yireim understands that Midvar Sheker Tirchak is a Ben Adam L'Chavero, it's an offense against someone else, which is violated when you hurt them through falsehood, through deceiving them. But a non-harmful lie wouldn't necessarily be included. Others thought that there was indeed an Issur D'oraisa, specifically from here or elsewhere, involved in any false statement, but the objection that those who limited it had was, if indeed there's an Issur D'oraisa anytime something that is said that is false, so then how do we ever have exclusions in heterim? And we know that we do. The Gemara in Yevamos tells us that it is mutter, maybe even a mitzvah, lushanos bidvar hashalom, for the sake of peace. The Gemara in Bav Metzia gives additional categories where it's permissible to deviate from the truth, either for the sake of peace, or perhaps for the sake of modesty, or for the sake of tznius. And therefore, it seems if there are going to be exceptions, it's hard to believe that there is an absolute prohibition that applies in all contexts. There are those who understand that the idea of Midvar Sheker Tirchak is to refer to a midah of Sheker and a midah of MS in the positive sense, and that perhaps we don't necessarily have an absolute prohibition on any false statement, but rather a goal-oriented commandment to make sure that we are conveying a true impression and bringing about the truth as a result rather than through the words specifically. If that's the case, it would still seem to be different in the context of Beis Din. And it could be that there's a distinction along those lines, that maybe the nature of this din is that one has to get truth as a result. And sometimes truth is going to incorporate also shalom, or anivas, or tznias, or qualities of the like. But in the context of Beis Din, there's a formal setting, and there the requirement is that we reach the truth through the formal process, and therefore there's no room even to say anything false, even if the goal was to reach the truth. And therefore, if we do indeed understand that in a mundane day-to-day context, that it's more about bringing about a result of truth rather than requiring every word to be completely accurate, that does leave room for some subjectivity, and therefore there are those who suggest then maybe that's why we have the language of Tirchak here, because it's somewhat risky with that subjective element, and therefore we have to take even greater care to make sure that we are reaching the goal of truth. There are those who understand additional elements here. It was said that the Ragachavar once wrote a Haskama, and he wrote only a few sentences, but then signed it at the bottom of the page, and when asked why, he said because it was Midvar Sheker Tochak, he wanted to distance himself from the false compliments in the Haskama. But there are other ways also of understanding what this notion of Harchaka is, specifically of distancing, is in this context, and the Lutzkerov, this Naim Latorah, notes that indeed, it is true that there are times when one must compromise on the truth for the sake of peace and the like, but if we cherish both midos, both emes and shalom, with sufficient passion, we'll do what we can to try to avoid having to compromise and to be put in a situation where we have to sacrifice one for the other. So therefore, the language of Midvar Sheker Tirchak is telling us that we should try to stay away from a situation where we would have to be mishaker, even if it would be justifiable and permitted. And the pasuk ends with the language "Vinaki v'tzadik al tarog." Rashi tells us that this is one of the bases we have for inclining towards trying to avoid imposing a chiyuv misa. And the Sefer Achinuch and Mitzvah Pei Beis, and the Rambam and Sefer Mitzvos Losase Reish Tzadi understand that there is a prohibition to ever give a Chiyuv Misa based on circumstantial evidence, based on an umdana, based on anything less than the absolute evidence that the Torah requires. And even if it may be very, very compelling, nonetheless, once you open the door to conclusions based on circumstantial evidence, then there could also be far less grounded evidence that could lead one to perhaps a mistaken conclusion. And in order to avoid that, the Torah doesn't allow conclusions based on that at all. And the next pasuk tells us about the prohibition of shochad v'shochad lo sikach ki ha-shochad ya'aver pichim v'yasalef divrei tzadikim. So here we have an absolute obligation of taking a bribe, and this is not simply to pervert justice, as already has been prohibited by the earlier pasuk, but even if one thinks this is consistent with the correct din, nonetheless, still prohibited. And the Gemara Maseches Kubas on Daf Kuf Hei tells us that the word shochad represents shehu, that through the taking of bribes there is a connection that is created between the two, and it's as if they are one person, and therefore it's as if somebody is judging on himself or a relative, which would be a disqualification. This idea that the power of shochad is to cause blindness in the eyes of tzaddikim. So here, the word tzaddikim is spelled male with two yuds, and Reb Chaim Kanievsky and others suggest that this is to convey the idea that we're talking about even complete tzaddikim, that we shouldn't think that there's anyone who is above the influence of bribery, and that no matter how great you are, if you were to take a bribe, it's going to compromise and bias your thinking. And this is despite the fact that the Chazon Ish wrote in his Amunah Bitachon that tzaddikim are above negios and that they make their decisions with objectivity, specifically because it is a mitzvah and a Kadosh Baruch Hu puts his faith in them. But it's when there's no shochad, because shochad is an isser that changes the whole reality, and it's the din of shochad that creates this effect of blinding the eyes of tzaddikim, and that's what the Chazon Ish is trying to maintain, that without shochad, if they are following the din properly, they will indeed be above all personal biases. But when shochad is involved, because the pasuk is telling us that creates the blindness, so that will be the result. And if that's the case, it seems as if it's limited specifically to where there is an absolute halacha, and we don't find that there's a prohibition of shochad in other areas outside of an adam l'chavero and choshen mishpat. It doesn't apply, for example, to one who is addressing questions in Yerideya and Arachayim, and Rav Zalman Nechemia Goldberg discussed that in his Shiurim, and he notes the Chazon Ish's explanation that it could be it's limited only to where there is an absolute halacha, but he finds that difficult. It would seem as if the logic is relevant to other areas as well, where judgment is being used, and he notes that the impact of shochad is not that it's going to automatically make someone change his decision, it's going to function more on a subconscious level, and it's going to drive drive someone to work harder, to try to find reasons to go in one direction or the other. So it's specifically in Bin Adam L'Chaveiro, where there are two sides, where it's not right to work harder on this behalf of one than the other. That is a violation of the principles of Mishpat and fairness and Sheker. But in other areas where you don't have two parties, we don't specifically have a prohibition to work harder for one angle rather than the other, for heter more than iser, or something along those lines. And therefore, the notion of shochad in that sense perhaps doesn't apply. The Chavis Yar writes that when it comes to the din of Bnei Noach, so there it's not an absolute principle, but it's more about the impact it has on perverting the din. And therefore, he writes that a Ben Noach can accept a bribe if it's in order to bring about a correct din, or can offer a bribe if it's in order to bring things back to the proper conclusion. And the Urim V'Tumim notes that this is understandable because in the context of Ben Noach, so a Karov is acceptable in any event, so even if the Shochad has the effect of turning the judge into someone like a Karov, that wouldn't in itself be disqualifying. There is a Takana that was discussed in the Minchas Elazar and the Avnei Nezer, that even in non-judicial contexts, even a public official who's not functioning as a judge is not allowed to take any such payments. This was a gzera going back to 1587, not to give money in order to get an appointment, for example. And Minchas Elazar understands that this was a new concept introduced by this takana, which otherwise would have been permitted, while the Avnei Nezer sees it as something that was always against the concept here and was being strengthened by this later innovation. Shochad is prohibited even if it comes from both sides, when one might think that one counteracts the other and balances it out. The Drisha says that this is a low plug policy across the board, while the Meiri writes that even if indeed they are equal to each other and you're getting it from both sides, but still it means that whatever conclusion is going to come from the payment and not from the din itself, and that's going to be wrong. The Chinuch writes that the one who receives a bribe has to give it back to the one who pays. In the Shulchan Aruch, it's brought to that he has to give it back if the giver requests it, and it sounds like not if he doesn't request it. Bach assumes that this is also apparently the view of the Rambam. And it's a machlokus between the Birkei Yosef and the Shvus Yaakov if one has to return it to be Yotzei De Shamayim to satisfy a moral obligation. The Minchas Chinuch writes that this is only going to be an issue if it ended up messing up the din, but otherwise the din is going to be kaim, is going to be upheld, and therefore there's no reason to have to return anything. Rizam the Chemi Goldberg found that whole concept very difficult. One would think that if a judge takes bribes and therefore establishes himself as acting improperly, that that should disqualify him and that the din indeed should be void, especially as the dayan has established himself as being blinded by the impact of the bribe. In Pasuk Yud and Yud Aleph and Yud Beis, we have some halachas of Shemitah and Shabbos, and Pasuk Yud Gimel has the language of V'chol Asher Amarti Aleichem Tishameru, and the Meshech Chachma understands that in all of these concepts there might be the temptation, he writes, to enter into a partnership with a non-Jew and therefore exempt oneself from the requirements related either to Shabbos or to Shemitah, and he understands that this language of Tishameru is saying not to do that, apparently taking a position that the Torah itself prohibits the notion of a heter mechira by Shemitah, of an arrangement that would allow for a sale that would exempt from the rules of Shemitah, a highly controversial topic at that time. And apparently the Meshech Chachma thought that there already was an indication from the Torah itself, and its Siv had a similar idea from a different pasuk, that the Torah itself was indicating that this is not proper. We then have the list of the Moadim here, and the Moadim are mentioned in the context of their agricultural markers, the idea of Chag HaKatzir, Chag HaAsif, and Rebekah Kamenetsky notes that the reference to the agricultural markers is perhaps to show the Jewish ideal of worshiping God through Gashmias. The Samdarich adds that this also takes attention of God's hashgacha in the world. And also, as Rebekah notes, that this is to show the correlation, as the psukim indicate, that when we are acting righteously, so then the agriculture will respond in kind. And the Aliyah ends with the concept of basa b'chalav, lo savashe el gedi b'chalei v'imo, appears three times in the Torah to tell us the three yisurim of cooking basa b'chalav, and of eating basa b'chalav, and getting hana from basa b'chalav. the nature of the prohibition is somewhat mysterious. It's often understood to be a very symbolic of the whole concept of a chok. And Rabbeinu Bachi writes that we don't know the reason. It's similar to Parah Aduma, but others have suggested various reasons that span the spectrum. The Rambam Amar Nevuchim understands that it was an idolatrous practice that was associated with the cults back then, and that therefore we are prohibited from imitating their ways, and maybe that's why it's specifically taught here in the context of Regalim, in order to note that it was a method of worship once upon a time. And others understand differently. The Rashbam says that it's a disgrace. It looks like gluttony to eat both the milk of the mother and the meat at the same time, and it's similar to Oso V'Espino in that sense. The Ibn Ezra sees it as an expression of Achzarius in that same vein of an act of cruelty, and he understands that primarily it actually refers to its literal description here of a kid in its mother's milk, and that's where the idea is really reflected. And because we don't know where the milk ever comes from, so therefore we prohibit all milk and all meat, but that's essentially the concept. And others see it in a more mystical sense, perhaps as the combining of opposites, of clashing ideas. Perhaps the meat represents the dead and the milk represents the living, and they're incompatible. Various ways of understanding this concept, and reflecting a theme that we find throughout the parsha of a mixture of chok and mishpat, some aspects that we perhaps can understand, some aspects that we find harder to understand. And part of the beauty of the nice of Nishma message is that we combine them both. We practice as if everything is a chok, and we do what we are asked to do, and we work to understand as best as we can as if everything is a mishpat, and the two come together and create that perfect blend.